You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. Thanks for joining us online, kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. So it's pretty interesting. Last night here on the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College, we had the orientation for Imperial Academy, which is the K-12 school here on the campus. And so that's always a a signal change, I guess, for the time of the year that it is. Summer, goodbye. Hello, hello, autumn. And the orientation lecture last night focused on developing a love for learning that lasts for a person's entire life. So really good points to bring up there. And it's kind of interesting because it ties into this headline. The USA Olympic basketball team is coached by Mike Krzyzewski. And this headline says, "What Mike Krzyzewski Continues to Learn Coaching Team USA." So it's pretty interesting. He's 69 years old. He's coached a lot of basketball, and he says, "I'm still learning about this game."
Yeah, maybe he's learned how there's no loyalty in basketball, or maybe he's learned about their lavish lifestyles a little bit more.
The bitterness of the post-Durant era in Oklahoma City. It says Krzyzewski is 69, and they asked him some questions about his experience at the Olympics, and they say he was soon talking about how this is always a learning process. A team of all-stars, he says, is thrown together, and it's a mad scramble to build chemistry and communication and game flow. So a lot of times when these guys start coaching in the higher levels of any sport, but basketball as well, it's not just the X's and the O's. It's how do you get these guys to get along and play together? How do you get guys that are used to playing 35 minutes a night to be the 12th guy on the bench?
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. I was watching some of Team USA's game against Australia yesterday, and it did seem like they were a bit disjointed, and Australia actually largely outplayed Team USA because, like you said, when you're expecting to be a superstar and you're the 12th man on Team USA, it can be quite an adjustment.
Yeah, for sure. We're going to talk about a little bit of that game in a minute here before we get into the Trumpet Daily radio show, because the host of today's show was Brent Noctegal. So he's from Australia, so we're going to give him a little shout-out for his team here in a moment. But they say that this experience has made Coach Krzyzewski a better coach, a quicker coach, a coach capable of getting thrown out, as they say, of the 55-mile-per-hour speed limit of college hoops and right into the Autobahn of NBA international basketball with varying styles and grown men stars and refs that don't always care what you think. Of course, Mike Krzyzewski is very famous in the U.S. as a college coach, and his critics will say that he influences the referees a little bit. Whether that's true or not, when it comes to the international game, they don't really know who you are, and they're not interested.
And they might not even speak the same language, because I'm pretty sure they can't be from either America or Australia if they're reffing a game between those two teams.
Yeah, so it's definitely a different situation for him. But I thought it was interesting that he says that he continues to learn at 69, and that ties into what they were talking about last night at the Imperial Academy orientation. You really do have to develop a love for learning, whatever your profession is, whatever you're doing, and keep learning. And I think what's kept Coach Krzyzewski so successful is a willingness to try something different. I mean, think about that. He's 69. I think this is the third time he's coached the Olympic team. He's been on the staff for quite some time. But it'd be easy enough to say, I'm going to take my summer off. I don't need to do that. He doesn't need the money. He doesn't need the fame. But yet he likes the challenge. But he's also continually learning. And one thing that his former players have said about him is that he was just a really good teacher for them. Not just about basketball, but life in general. So I think he does in some ways embody sort of this principle of continuing to learn your whole life and not saying, hey, I'm done with school. Time to sit back and just watch TV.
Yeah, it's amazing to think what could have happened if, like I read, he got fired after his first year or two at Duke because they weren't extremely successful. But I guess the people who hired him could see that he was making some good changes, and now he might be one of the greatest coaches ever.
Yeah, his first three seasons, I think he lost. He had a negative record as far as more losses than wins, but they stuck with him, and they saw this. You know, it takes time to build up a program. Now players want to go play at Duke University, where before they were a winning program. Obviously, you wouldn't get as many good players. I'm still a little bitter towards him. They beat my Badgers a couple years ago in the finals. It was like for the NCAA championship. It was our one chance in like 100 years.
Oh, man.
Everything fell just right. You know, you don't get there too often unless you're some of these powerhouse schools, and we just couldn't quite do it. So that so I'm a little bitter towards him.
Yeah, that's I know how you feel. I mean, you're telling me about basketball bitterness.
Right. Yeah, and you're a Buffalo Bills fan, so you guys have had a tough run.
I've never actually seen them make the playoffs or the Seattle Mariners. Like, I started watching both of them in 2003. Neither one has made the playoffs since that time.
I am old enough to remember the Bills' four consecutive Super Bowls and unfortunately losses as well. And I can actually remember very vividly the first one. I think they played the Giants, if my memory serves me correctly. And they were such heavy favorites. And mm-hmm. People said, oh, they're going to win by 20 or 30 points. And it was didn't work out that way.
He shanked the field goal at the end. That's what it came down to.
That's right. And then that kind of lives in infamy. Mm-hmm. That's how you're known as. No matter how many you make, you miss that one critical one and people remember.
Yeah, and the thing is, you can never really solely blame a kicker for a team's loss, because there's always interceptions and fumbles and incomplete passes earlier in the game that could have cost you as well.
Right. That's why I've always said, if I ever had a chance to make the NFL, which I do not, I think either third string quarterback, so you hardly ever play, or punter. Mm-hmm. Because I've always felt that there's really no pressure on the punter. Even if you have a bad kick, it's like, well, people forget about it and the defense has to hold. You're not expected to tackle anyone. If you do, it's, you know, like, wow, he actually tackled somebody. If it gets blocked, hey, the line didn't block for you. And you're not kicking that point, you know, at the end, the extra point or the field goal to win the game. You just go kick and go sit on the sidelines.
Yeah, speaking of kickers or punters making tackles, do you remember that Steelers-Browns game a couple of years ago where the punt returner purposely flying face-kicked the guy?
Yes.
He like, stomped downward as he came back to the ground. And just destroyed the kicker's life.
Unnecessary.
Oh, yeah. That was brutal.
Yeah. So, anyway, if for some reason a team out there needs a punter, I am available most Sundays. I don't know how far I could kick it, but if you stick with me, I'm sure I'll improve.
Well, that's what you're doing on Sunday anyway, is watching, so you might as well just play in those same games.
Yeah, just kick form. So we'll see if I get any calls. Me and Tim Tebow. Also staying with the Olympics here and some of what's going on. You may have noticed, I don't know if anybody watched any of the swimming or the diving. The diving, I think, especially. But the Olympic divers say the mysteriously green pool water had a surprising benefit. One of the pools turned green. Did you see that?
I heard about it. I didn't see a picture, though.
Yeah, it. You never like that. You know, you're going in to swim or dive, and one of the pools is blue and the other one's green. They said it actually helped them. They said Rio officials admitted to not knowing what caused the color change. That's disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the color change is bad enough, but if you're not sure why, that's very disturbing.
Just say it's algae. I mean, yeah. Don't leave everyone suspicious.
Yeah, so that's another one of these Olympic mysteries. But they said it actually helped some of the divers because usually it's blue, and they say, you know, it kind of what's the same color basically as the sky. So they're used to it, but they said the fact that the water was a different color actually sort of helped them in their dive, because it just gave them something else to look at as they were entering the water.
Wow, that's I never would have thought of that.
They said that one of the divers from Canada, actually, Megan Benefito, said it's not the same color as the sky, so that was really on our side today. So apparently that helped them to some extent. And I don't know, nobody's sick yet.
I wonder if it helped their depth perception at all. Maybe that's what they're talking about.
Yeah, probably just, well, you know, they do all those flips, and so you have to obviously know when to come around the right time, and they do it so much, I'm sure that it doesn't matter much, but they said it was somewhat helpful. So, and then they went ahead with it. So that'll be one of those infamous Olympic moments of the diving into the green pool.
That sounds like a lot of fun, but at the same time, it could be dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, anywhere you go, if you take your kids to a little water park, I've had this happen twice, where they blow the whistle or whatever, and they're like, everybody just take a couple hours off. We need to clean this out. And you can guess something happened that shouldn't have happened in there. I can imagine if it was an entirely green pool that people would say, you know what, I'm going to pass today. I'm going to come back.
Yeah, probably.
Come back another time. The Olympics are always interesting for a lot of reasons, and sometimes it's because political tension can occur. And this happened here, and there's not a lot of reporting about this, but I thought this was really interesting. It's from the Washington Times. Israeli athletes in Rio endure shocking hostility taunting by Muslim nations. Have you heard anything about this?
Was it by the athletes themselves?
Yeah.
Wow. That's terrible.
They on Sunday, the IOC issued a reprimand. A reprimand. That's like somebody's parents saying, like, one more time, I'll count to 10 again.
But it means nothing.
No, yeah. Right. They issued a reprimand to the head of the Lebanese Olympic delegation after he blocked. It was the head of the Lebanese Olympic delegation in this case. He blocked the Israeli athletes from entering a bus that the teams were supposed to share to reach the opening ceremony. They wouldn't let him on the bus.
Don't let him compete then.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a terrorist sponsoring nation anyway.
Right. They said instead Olympic organizers placed the Israeli athletes on a special vehicle, an Israeli sailing team trainer said. So they weren't allowed to get on the bus, and they blocked their way. They had to get on a special vehicle, whatever that is. They say the bus driver opened the door, but this time the head of the Lebanese delegation blocked the aisle and entrance, according to one of the Israelis. They said the organizers wanted to avoid an international and physical incident and sent us away to a different bus. I can appreciate wanting to avoid an international incident, but you'd have to take care of that with something a little more severe. Like you said, I would say, look, you're not going to be part of it.
Right.
That's your attitude? Then go home.
Or make the Lebanese get off the bus and go in their own vehicle and don't separate out the Israelis for doing nothing wrong.
Yeah, that's just crazy. They said, how is it possible that they let something like this happen? And on the opening night of the Olympic Games, Miri Regev, he's the Israeli Minister of Culture and Sports, he blasted the Lebanese incident as anti-Semitism pure and simple and the worst kind of racism. Yeah, absolutely. And as much as the media likes to talk about racism, this is a case, you know, a really vivid example of that. I'm surprised it hasn't gotten more coverage. I hadn't heard of it until this article and what we're already about a week in.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's been reported, but I mean, I check the headlines pretty much every day. I didn't see anything about it.
Right. Yeah. A lot of opponents of political correctness today say, well, you're only criticizing conditions in America. You don't seem to care about all the oppressed people around the world. You just care that maybe the blacks in this nation are mistreated or something like that. Sometimes when it comes to reporting, it's all about the, you know, our nation. It's all about America. And sometimes these other issues get buried when they shouldn't.
And sometimes they kind of flip the script and say, well, what do you expect? You know, the Israelis are oppressing them. I mean, that's said a lot, too.
That's another thing, yeah.
In the media. So anyway, the Lebanese delegation head, he said, they said he was reportedly hailed in Lebanon as a hero for this. So they're rejoicing about it. He told the Arabic media that he was, quote, surprised to see the Israeli delegation approaching and trying to get on. I told the bus driver to close the door, but a trainer who was with the Israelis prevented him from doing so. He said, I had to physically stand at the door and block him and the rest of the delegation from boarding, knowing that some were trying to force their way through and were looking for trouble.
Come on.
They were scheduled to get on that bus.
Right. That's ridiculous.
Looking for trouble.
Yeah, it's surprising none of the Israelis decided to throw down. I mean, they could have and been excused for it.
Yeah, it would have been an incident for sure.
Yeah.
Days later, another example, Yaud Fahmy of Saudi Arabia forfeited a first-round judo match Sunday in what the Israeli press described as a tactic to avoid facing Israel's Gilly Cohen in the second round.
Wow.
So it is kind of playing out with the athletes as well. So the Olympics are supposed to be a bringing together of the nations and a chance to put away all the politics and all the fighting that occurs and have a good sport competition, but you can't even get along playing sports.
Yeah, just ban those nations. I mean, honestly, how good are any of them at the Olympic competitions anyway in general? So if they're not going to contribute in terms of the Olympic ideal, don't even let them play.
Yeah, they really should make a bigger deal out of it than I think they did. But so interesting. I hadn't heard much about that, and it's sad to see that's happening. And you know, it's interesting if you compare and contrast, say, this report with the way there have been reports in this country about the media or the media has reported about how some of the commentators have made, as they view it, insensitive comments towards women athletes. And they're making a big deal out of those. And right. I think kind of maybe making more out of it than what it is.
Big time.
Yeah. But then kind of ignoring this, too. And this is real legitimate, just out in your face hatred.
Well, right. You know, feminism is strong in America today, but these same Arabic nations, they have horrible human rights grades. So if you really cared about the issue so much, you might speak out about their human rights and the way they treat women so poorly.
Yeah, it's always interesting when the way the media handles these different reports. Fox has a interesting story today, too. This is fairly new news today. There's a House probe. Central Command reports skewed intel on the ISIS fight. And so this is pretty interesting. Intelligence reports produced by U.S. Central Command that track the Islamic State's 2014-15 rise in Iraq and Syria were skewed to present a rosier picture of the situation on the ground, according to a bombshell report released Thursday by a House Republican task force. When the allegations initially surfaced last year, the White House insisted no one in the administration pressured anyone and suggested blame may rest with the military.
Oh, come on.
So, but you might recall, listeners might recall that not too long ago, the President Obama referred to ISIS as the JV team.
Right. So to make that comment look less egregious, you can make the reports match up with that.
Right. And then to come out and say, well, we didn't tell anyone to do anything. Well, I don't know. Maybe they did. Maybe they didn't. But the message that was given publicly was that they weren't a big concern. That has been brought up, the JV comment, to the president. He denies it. The White House denies it. They say he was speaking generally about a variety of groups. You can read the transcript for yourself if you want. It's at politifact.com. And ISIS wasn't directly named in that transcript. That is true. Mm-hmm. But they're clearly discussing that group.
That's the context of the conversation.
Sure. Yeah, can read it for yourself, and you can watch the video.
Wow.
So anyway, it's interesting. It's just the fact, two things that are interesting, I think. One is that, yeah, wait a second now. The intelligence was intentionally skewed to make things seem different than they were, which is terrible. And why have intelligence? You have a propaganda machine. You don't have intelligence. And the second thing is to come out and just completely insist that, well, we didn't do anything. Maybe blame the military.
Yeah.
Well, who knows what they did internally, but we all know publicly they were really downplayed as not being that big of a threat.
Yeah, why do these reports fit in exactly with the administration's ideals of letting in as many immigrants as possible from all these different nations? They have obviously excoriated Donald Trump for saying that certain Muslims from these different nations should be banned until we know who they are. Yet these reports are saying, well, you know, ISIS isn't necessarily as dangerous as you might think. You know, it's kind of suspicious.
Yeah, it's a coincidence.
It's a big old coincidence.
Lots of coincidences. It's amazing how that all works out that way. One last headline here from Fox Business. We were talking yesterday about how Kmart and Sears are closing stores. Now Macy's is jumping on board. Macy's to close 100 stores despite having some better profits than they thought, although just not to the point they need. Macy's Incorporated said it plans to close about 100 stores. That's 14% of its store base, and would continue to seek partnerships for its flagship locations as it seeks to turn around its business after 6 quarters of falling sales. Department stores have been struggling with stiff competition from online and off-price retailers, and they are also under pressure as shoppers, they say, are spending more on big-ticket items such as electronics and cars than on clothes. So that's one of the reasons they're closing those stores. But again, that's employees that now need another job. If you're getting fired from Kmart or Sears, you're like, let's go work at Macy's.
Oh, that was my...
They closed those too.
That was my priority. It's not working out.
So anyway, it does affect people, and it will affect the employment. And it is interesting just to see how, despite some rosy pictures about the economy, some of the facts on the ground are that places are closing up.
Why is it that so many of these reports are skewed about the economy, about ISIS? It does seem to be a pretty big coincidence that it's exactly what the Obama administration has been saying. Like, you know, immigrants aren't a big deal. The economy is flourishing. and it's never been better.
Yeah, and they do report, of course, that in some cases it is a changing economy, and that does phase people out over time. But again, the numbers aren't as rosy as sometimes are portrayed, and we all know that. I mean, the numbers that come out I think they do it every month. While the unemployment number is low, there's a lot not in the workforce, and also we're not having much of a rise in terms of our GDP. It's flat, or you know. And then even when those reports come out, like sometimes a day or two later, they come out with the revised report way down at the bottom of the page. Like, oh, yeah, by the way, it wasn't as good as we thought.
Why is that every time?
Yeah. It's interesting. I also saw a story today that, you know, a lot of newspapers transitioned to online because that's just kind of the way things are going. But they thought, well, we'll charge for subscriptions online. Well, I mean, that doesn't work. Nobody pays for that in most cases because there's so much free content out there. So they're having to change their strategy. I think they call it the paywall or whatever. You know, you can see so much, but then you got to pay to see more, and that's not working out either. So it is definitely a changing economy, and people have to be nimble and able to change what they're doing if they want to exist in it. And when you've got a bunch of big stores and malls like Macy's does, it's hard to make them profitable when a lot of people are just going online.
Yeah, and you might want to try and strategize and see how you can fit into a niche better, but by the time you figure out a strategy, a lot of the time you've run out and competitors have taken you over. And there's cons to that in such a capitalist type of society, but at the same time, the consumers do get the very best a lot of the time.
Yeah, I mean, you just have such a wide selection of things online. It didn't used to be that way. I mean, if you couldn't find it in your local store, good luck, right? What are you going to do? Right. Maybe they could order something. But nowadays, boy, you could find just about anything you want. And so that's a changing thing somewhat. Those are some of the headlines today that are happening. The Key of David program's coming up here in a bit on KPCG. One of the programs today is Putin Remembers Yugoslavia. Really, really great program. We've played this one a few times, of course, but very important to keep that in mind. The media doesn't talk so much about Russia right now. They're not writing the headlines, I guess, here in the U.S. anyway. But there's a lot going on with Putin, the way he's trying to spread Russia's power around, greater influence, greater impact. And a lot of that gets back to what happened with the former Yugoslavia, the way that those nations were broken, were into pieces, that nation was, and Europe really went after them. Mm-hmm. And he didn't like that.
Right. It's clear that he still believes that these nations of the former Soviet bloc are still Russian property, and he doesn't exactly agree with Western powers taking advantage and often breaking up those that whole block, really.
Right. So really interesting program. And again, it's one of those where you can listen to it. And it was taped a couple of years ago, but you can follow what's happened since. So it's really a good program. We'll have a brand new program for you tomorrow morning as well, a brand new Key of David. So make sure you listen for that. New Trumpet Daily Radio Show today, Brent Nachtigall filling in. Of course, he's usually in Jerusalem, but he's over there in Edstone for the Philadelphia Youth Camp for a while. And so, we mentioned earlier, he's originally from Australia. So we wanted to point out that the U.S. men's basketball team yesterday beat Australia, but just barely. According to ESPN, they said the Australian men's basketball team gave the U.S. its biggest challenge by far this Olympics, fighting from start to finish, and just fell short of Team USA 98-88.
I was disappointed. I wanted Australia to win, honestly.
They've got a couple of NBA guys. They've got Bogut, right? Mm-hmm. Dellavedova. Everybody's favorite.
Patty Mills.
Dellavedova is everybody's favorite pest. He's considered one of the dirtiest players in the NBA.
Yeah.
And he always looks like, what did I do?
I know. He's so innocent every single time. And there was one play Bogut flattened Durant when Durant drove.
Yeah. Well, there you go, sending a message.
Some NBA storylines going on there. Bogut was traded so that the Warriors had room to sign Kevin Durant.
Right.
Maybe he has some bitterness, too, and decided to flatten Durant.
Didn't Bogut end up going to Dallas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Harrison Barnes, too.
And Barnes, too, yeah. Right. So, well, that'll be interesting. Yeah, I think sometimes those guys like Dellavedova, he plays hard. And guys, it's funny because it is a competition, but guys often get very irritated when somebody plays hard and they don't stop.
Right.
You know, it's like, hey, you're supposed to not keep bothering me. He just keeps bothering him. I think he even caused one of the guys to get a technical foul, if I read correctly. He definitely got under their skin, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that actually, that whole game was pretty chippy. I only got to see the third quarter of it, but there was a lot of trash talking and a lot of kind of subtle shoving each other while the play wasn't even happening.
Yeah, so it's interesting. They did say that outside of the USA, Australia might be the team to beat. Mm-hmm. And this has given them some confidence if they meet the USA in the gold game. You know, it could be anybody's game.
That would be a great game. It was so competitive yesterday, and the U.S. has been blowing out some of these teams 100-plus to around 60, so not even entertaining to watch. By the way, Matthew Dellavedova signed with the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yes,
so,
he did, my hometown Bucks.
You know, Thunder's your favorite team, but the Bucks, hometown.
Yeah, I've got a little bit of love for them, and Dellavedova's one of those guys you love on your team.
Yeah,
but you don't like playing against them.
I think that about the Thunder too. Like, they could just be one of the most irritating teams ever now. Everyone hates playing against Russell Westbrook. Andre Roberson, guys are always shoving him because he plays so hard on defense.
Mm-hmm.
Steven Adams, everyone's convinced he takes cheap shots.
Right.
So they're just not going to be a very pleasant team to play against.
Yeah, well, and that's great if they're your team, which they are our team.
They're lovable. So, yeah.
The lovable. It's like people in Detroit used to love the Pistons back when they were the bad boys and would punch everybody and step on their feet and clothesline them and all that. Not that we recommend that. That's not the good way to play, but sometimes people do.
And sometimes you win championships by playing that way, apparently.
Sometimes. you still got to score, but sometimes that playing a little rougher helps too. But there was a Trump a Daily Radio Show. We digress there for Brent Noctegal's sake. But a really good program today talked about a very important prophecy concerning Jerusalem and the return of Christ. For those that follow Bible prophecy, if you are interested in the return of Christ, you've got to pay attention to Jerusalem and what's happening over there. And he talked a fair bit about what's going on there, and he's the guy to talk about it because he's living over there now.
Yeah, it's a dangerous situation. Terrorist attacks taking place almost every day, and you know, I don't want to spoil the program, but prophecy says some very big events are going to take place there very soon.
Right. He gets into Zechariah 14, verses 1 and 2, and you can check that out if you haven't heard it already, and read up on that and see, and then listen to the program. And he gives a great plug for the free booklet, Jerusalem in Prophecy. You can find that at thetrumpet.com. It's free, like all of the literature, at thetrumpet.com. And it explains what he talks about in more detail. He gets into a lot of detail in the show, but then to sit down and read it really helps as well. So, and he goes through some of those headlines right now that are trending toward the fulfillment of three specific phases talked about there in Zechariah 14, 1 and 2. And it ends in the return of Christ. That sounds pretty fantastical to a lot of people, but that's what the Bible says.
And it could be hard to see to that point with all the terrible events taking place today, but that's exactly right. The future is bright.
There is a lot of hope there in Jerusalem, and of course even our headlines today just talking about the some of the anti-Semitism going on at the Olympics. They're really under a lot of pressure just about everywhere they go. Being the nation of Judah there, Israel in the Middle East. So make sure you listen for that program, the Trump a Daily Radio Show. If you can't catch it live or catch one of the replays, the archives are always online at kpcg.fm. We're going to take a quick break, come back, and talk about Baltimore. A lot going on in Baltimore with the police. There's some new reports that have come out from the Justice Department about what they're going to do in Baltimore. We'll talk about that right after this. You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live.